Welcome to your Found Family podcast, where we don't just have a heart-to-heart, we connect soul to soul. I'm your host, Lizzie, a certified coaching practitioner who found family outside of blood family. In our Found Family, you are accepted and assured that you are not alone. Subscribe and tune in for educational and empowering soul chats with women from all over the world, talking about well-being, personal growth and development, and mental and emotional health. Welcome back to another episode of Found Family. Today, I have with me a very special guest, Katie, who will be soul chatting with me about the topic panic attacks. Katie is a freelance writer specializing in mental health, and she's from the UK. She has lived with mental illness since the age of 14, including panic attacks and bipolar disorder. I'm super excited to be chatting about this with you. So welcome, Katie.
Hiya, great to be here. Thank you. Oh,
thank you. All right, so to start us off, a question that I'm sure most of our listeners will have. When did you first experience your first panic attack?
Oh, well, the first one that I really noticed was when I was 18. I'd just been at university for the first term. I'd come back for a sort of winter break. And I remember being in bed and feeling like, oh, I feel a bit sick. I don't feel right. I feel weird. And I went downstairs, and then I started having this like intense pain in the middle of my chest and through into my back. And I was so scared. I thought I was having a heart attack. I really freaked out. It was horrible. Mm. And it was like every step I took, it sort of resonated through my body, this pain. And obviously, because I was so scared, because I thought I was having a panic, heart attack, I started hyperventilating. Mm. Couldn't catch my breath. Couldn't catch my breath at all. Breathing really, really quickly. Which, if you do that, it makes it worse. Makes the pain worse.
Yep.
And heightens everything. Yeah. And
definitely,
I ended up going to hospital because my mum was there and she was scared. She, what was going on? And so we ended up ringing an ambulance because I had chest pain, and obviously I'd never had anything like this before. Mm. Went to hospital and had like EKG and everything was normal. And the doctor, I don't think he was very old. He was like a junior doctor, and he was really confused, didn't know what it was, and said, yeah, I think it's maybe you've sprained your chest.
And he didn't know it was a panic attack. That's so interesting.
He didn't pick it up at all. And I had blood tests, and everything came back clear, and I had x-ray in my chest as well, all clear. And it was my mum, because my mum used to work with young people and children with mental health problems. And she thought, do you think it was a panic attack? And she said, this is what panic attacks are like. And I was like, yeah, it probably was. But at the time, I didn't want it to be. I thought, oh, no, I don't have those. That doesn't happen to me.
Right.
But after that, I used to have them all the time, two or three a week. And they'd feel like they lasted for like an hour or two, but what I realized was having little short ones, but in very quick succession, so it just felt like one long panic attack for a couple of hours. And it wasn't fun.
No, definitely not. And I think, you know, first and foremost, a lot of what you just shared like really resonated with me, and I can see a lot of my story in your story. And I think one thing that I find to be so surprising is the fact that for people who experience panic attacks later on in life, they don't know, as you said, like they don't even know that they're experiencing a panic attack. It's something that's like, you know, and I've been hearing stories similar to yours where people have experienced panic attacks later. And again, like I read like a book too about, you know, a woman who said like same thing, like I thought I was having a heart attack. I thought
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I need to go to the hospital. Oh my God, what's wrong? Like, what's happening to me? And I think that the reason why I personally just find that to be so how is that even possible? Is because my first experience with a panic attack was like in elementary school. And so having been such a young person, I've lived with panic attacks for like 26 years, and it started at such a young age. And I think at that age, like, yes, I felt like the same kinds of, you know, bodily experience that you experienced in terms of like tightness in your chest and, you know, pain in your back and just like this hyperventilation that just takes over everything. It is truly the worst feeling ever.
It really
but
is.
But I think, it's awful. I just think that for having experienced it so early in life, I didn't know what a heart attack was and I didn't know what a panic attack was. So like, you know, as an adult, I'm 28 years old now, and it's like, I look back at my younger self with so much compassion and like sorrow for just not knowing. Like, you know, I'm so grateful to hear that your mom was able to help sort of identify like what had happened. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what was happening. None of my family members knew what was happening. And no one knew how to like help me or take care of me. And because I was so young, I was just like scared all the time. And I already was like, you know, living in so much fear. But again, you know, that was kind of like my first experience. I think I might've been like 5 years old. And I just remember having debilitating panic attacks that like in a similar way, they used to feel like they were hours, but sometimes they were like, you know, 20 minutes. Sometimes they were a little bit shorter. Sometimes they, you know, were even longer than 20 minutes, but they just felt like they were, you know, hours and hours and hours. So I know that we kind of talked a little bit about like the experience in your body and like how it made your body feel. Was there thoughts that were going through your mind as well in terms of like how those made you feel?
Yeah, I mean, panic attacks, I think for me, it's just overwhelming feeling of sort of dread and fear and being really scared and not really knowing why. When I knew what it was more frustration because I was like, I know what this is and it keeps happening. I don't understand why it's happening. And I was getting more and more worked up about the experience. But again, feeling like you'd have to go and do something and then you'd have a panic attack and it was just this dread that you got just come over you. And it was just, pretty negative sort of spirals you'd get yourself into.
Yeah. And I think that awareness, again, kind of ties in with what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, where for those who might be listening right now who have experienced this kind of sensation in their body and they don't know what's wrong or they don't know what to call it, you know, I think that I see labeling as this very, like, positive and negative at the same time. Like, I hate putting things in boxes. I hate labeling things. But at the same time, when it comes to mental health, I personally have found that when I gain an awareness about how someone feels during some type of episode or how they think or how they process information, and then gaining that awareness in addition to learning like what that is, there is a sense of comfort and relief because then you are able to like identify, okay, so I've experienced panic attacks. Now I know that this was a panic attack. What can I learn more about it? How can I, you know, work towards it? Are there other people I can talk to? You know, obviously the pain and the discomfort that the mind and the body in unison feel together is horrible. And frustration is like such a great word because, you know, as I got older and continued to have these episodes, when I eventually came to realize that it, you know, I was experiencing panic attacks and it was, you know, because of anxiety and depression that I had been feeling, I was at least able to like reach out to people. And, you know, it got to a point for me where after I had graduated college and I was like in the workforce, it was like my first job. So this was, excuse me, probably like 2014 was the first quote unquote real like adulting job, because I graduated 2013. I was kind of like dabbling in a few things just to figure out my way. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where I needed Xanax because I couldn't function when I was having the panic attack. And as kind of like a piggyback question that I wanted to kind of ask you about, like the sensation, what did it like, I know what it felt like, but did it stop you from doing anything? Like, was there other, you know, like how were you able to kind of handle it as it was happening, as you were still going about your day?
Well, I'd find it completely debilitating to begin with, because the pain was so bad and it would make me feel dizzy, make me feel sick. And moving would hurt, lying down, it would hurt, I'd feel ill. So it was, I couldn't really do anything. When I had the panic attack, that was it. That was it. That was all there was.
Yep.
Because I didn't have any tools to deal with it. I didn't understand it. I mean, this was happening in 2004 onwards. And I don't think people are talking about mental health as much as they are, like, say, 10 years later in 2014.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
very
now
true.
It's great. You know, so many people are talking about it now. Mm-hmm. But back then, people just didn't really talk about it as much. It wasn't really in the media. It was sort of under the radar, really. I didn't know anyone that was dealing with it. No one was really talking about it. So yeah, when it did happen, I just sort of shut down and could not do anything. I'd just sit and like, I was like, if I move, it's going to make it worse. I just need to sort of ride it out. When I was having them like two or three times a day, and I was at college, and then I was doing a sort of apprenticeship at another local nursery for children, I just, if I had a panic attack, I couldn't go into work, or I'd have to sort of excuse myself, that kind of thing. I used to get them a lot at night, so I wasn't sleeping very well. It would just wake me up at 2 a.m.
Oh, wow.
It would go on for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Or I might have two in a row. And then I couldn't go back to bed. I couldn't go back to bed because I was obviously freaked out and thought, how am I possibly going to go back to sleep? I'm worried about having another one. So I'd be up all night, the rest of the night, and then have to go to college or have to go to work. So it was a pretty bad time. It wasn't until later when I got therapy that I learned how to deal with them.
Yeah, and I definitely want to dive deeper into like your overcoming and what helped you during those episodes and helped you to overcome it. I would say that, you know, in a similar way, and the word that you used when you said shut down, that resonates a lot with me as well, because I think that that's probably the only way that I can even say I felt like. Kind of paint a picture here. I was in elementary school. I was living in Connecticut. My brother is 4 years younger than me, so he was like, you know, a newborn, 1 year old. You know, I was like five, and my elementary school was actually behind my house. So in order to go to school, my mom would walk me over the grass of our backyard. My grandfather built a fence that divided our property and the school's property. And then it was the school parking lot, and then the elementary school was right there. And
yeah.
I recall having such severe panic attacks, especially right before school, because there's so much, you know, there was so much like uncertainty. I would say that as far as a young person going through things like that, there's already so much fear and uncertainty and just things in life that could make you feel anxious, you know, like, well, what do my friends think about me? And, you know, how's school going to be today? Am I going to, you know, whatever. But for me, there was so much more intensity in the way that I was feeling. And when I was personally experiencing them, my body would literally shut down to the point where I couldn't talk. I couldn't walk anymore. I would start and like, it's crazy for me to just be here in this moment talking about this with you and like recalling things, because I almost wanted to save like my, you know, like record, like my memory about it during the call so that it would just be like as raw and vulnerable and like, you know, just like as it could possibly be. So I'm sitting here, but my mind is like back in like 1996, you know, like crossing the yard. And I just remember, or however you old, because I guess at this point, you know, for first, second grade, you're like, what, seven? But I was still having them really badly. So I had to sing like Mary Had a Little Lamb, but I would like tap my mouth and like hum it. And for some reason, that was like kind of my coping mechanism. But I wasn't able to like speak. You know, my mom would, you know, again, she had no idea what was happening to me. So she was like, you know, come on here, like, let's go to school. And it would take me maybe 20 minutes to cross the yard and get to school, where like if I wasn't experiencing a panic attack, or if I was, you know, like if someone who didn't experience panic attacks were to cross the yard and go to the school, it would normally be like a 5 minute walk. Not even like, wow. Not even that's even that's dramatic. It's probably like a 3 minute walk, and it would take me 20 minutes because I would walk and then I would stop and I would, you know, like, and like, I actually haven't made that humming noise like for literally years, but that was literally what I had to do. And it would take me 20 minutes just to get to the parking lot. And then similar to you as well, you know, I would experience panic attacks more than once a day. And sometimes it would be back to back, but I was having at least one a day for like several years. And then it kind of subsided and it was, you know, like once a day for like maybe 3 days a week, but it kind of varied, but it was the worst when I was a kid. But that, I was just kind of curious to hear from you, like when it was happening, if there was, you know, like things that you weren't able to do, because I'm not sure. I would be super curious to hear like from our listeners who have experienced panic attacks, if in a similar way, like, you know, they couldn't function. I would imagine so, but it's a lot. It's like really a lot.
It really is. I mean, as I got older, I did somehow manage to work with a panic attack. I did a few times, and I don't know how I did it, because I had at one point a particularly stressful job. I was working with like vulnerable families and their young children that were going through a lot, and I'd be there to support them if they needed anything and get them help. And it was stressful. And I remember going to work and I was like, I've got this really big meeting. I have to be there. The family are there and all the people supporting them are there, social workers and teachers and nurses and everyone and me. And I have to be there. And I have this, and I can feel it coming on, this panic attack. And I was like, oh my God, how am I going to get through this? I have no idea. And somehow I managed to do it. I just said to myself, I have to be here because I have to be here for that family, because I'm there representing them. So somehow I managed to do it, but I felt so unbelievably drained for the rest of the day. I had to go home. But that's another thing that it does, is it just completely drains you, like your energy level just completely goes, because your body is just on sort of hyperdrive. Because it's that fight or flight situation that you're in, and the physical symptoms just absolutely knock you out, and you're absolutely exhausted afterwards.
Yeah, that's so true, and it's great. For, you know, for you to say like fight or flight, that's 100% how it starts. I can feel, you know, like I would feel my heart starting to race. My throat would start to feel like it was closing. My brain would start running a mile a minute. You know, it was just everything, the body and the mind just starting to, okay, I need to either run or I need to fight. And now I can consciously recognize that it was like my body's attempt of trying to, you know, help me, but it was not doing the job that I wanted it to do. Yeah. It was, you know, it was going like in a totally different direction. But as like a piggyback question, did you experience triggers? Were there certain triggers that would sort of lead you to that panic attack?
Mostly stress, stressful situations. I tend to find I will go through a stressful situation and be perfectly fine. People kind of say I'm a bit like a swan, where I look really calm on the outside, but I am paddling furiously underneath the water because my brain is just working, but I seem really calm. People go, I can't believe how calm you were. I wasn't. So I'd get through these stressful situations fine and appear okay. And then like a day afterwards, I'd have a panic attack, or a couple of days after that stressful event, I'd have a panic attack. And I find as well, there's sort of an extra something in the mix is I have bipolar disorder as well. And when I have mania, which is feeling very up, ecstatic, having energy, talking really fast, all these things that sound wonderful, but you also get very angry and self-destructive as well, you'd burn out. You'd have all this energy and you'd be go, 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 go for like a month or two. And then at the end of it, I would get what I call my mania hangover. So part of the hangover would be depression, but another part of it would be panic attack. So it would be like my body and my brain's way of saying, you've done too much and you're going to pay for it now through panic attacks and feeling awful. I laugh about it now because I'm aware of it. And I think that's the most important thing, is to be aware of your triggers and why it's happening and what you can do about it. And I think with stress is really tough, but when I can recognize I'm in a stressful situation, I will talk to someone about it and I'll go, look, I'm really stressed at the moment. What can I do to help myself and sort of release some of this stress? Can I take time off work? Or is there something I need to resolve? Is there sort of some drama in my life, in my personal life, that I need to resolve? Or do I just need to accept, okay, I'm stressed out right now, and sort of go with it and look after myself? There's some situations that you can't control and you are going to get stressed.
Yeah.
But it's how do you look after yourself?
Definitely.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah, so important. And that word acceptance is so powerful. It sounds like rainbows and butterflies and sparkles, but it's so much more challenging to accept something that hurts you or that makes you feel a type of way. You know, I can certainly relate to that as well, because, you know, it took me years to accept this part of me. I didn't want to, because it was a part of me that I hated. It was a part of me that stopped me from being a part of my elementary school talent show with my friends because I was terrified that I would have a panic attack in the middle. It stopped me from, you know, going out and doing things with other people. It stopped me from just so much that I literally despised this part of me. I hated the panic attacks. I hated that I was such an anxious person. And even though there were days where I tried my best to accept it, it was such an internal battle. And every day I needed to be so conscious of making an effort to extend love and kindness to myself. My triggers, again, started in elementary school. And I talked about this a little bit in like a blog post about emetophobia. But when I saw someone in the cafeteria named Raymond, even that name sometimes it triggered me for years. And it still feels weird like saying that name, Raymond, because he threw up in the elementary school cafeteria, and I just remember seeing everyone's reaction. And I must have associated to some degree that throwing up in public was a bad thing that, you know, caused so much distress in other people. It caused this ripple effect of like negative attention. And I associated food with throwing up. So for me, my panic attacks became worse after I associated food with throwing up, and I was terrified of throwing up. So anytime my stomach would feel any type of discomfort, and I didn't know at the time that I'm lactose intolerant, I'm sensitive to gluten. But again, in the 90s, these things were like not talked about. And I live in an Italian family with like two immigrant parents, you know, like who love cheese and love pasta. Exactly. Exactly. So like, you know, it was a lot of like, drink your milk, have this cheese, eat this pasta. And like, everything was hurting my stomach. And I didn't know why it was hurting my stomach. But all I knew to associate that discomfort in my stomach was, oh my God, you're about to throw up. And that would start the panic. So the triggers were like, I mean, literally happening everywhere. And another thing that I commented in my blog post, I told my therapist about this too. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that I blocked this out of my brain for so long until recently. But I remember that another like coping mechanism, like another compulsion that I had, I needed to have water bottles with me at all times. I, for whatever reason, associated water with like a sense of relief, a sense of comfort, because I thought, if I throw up and have this panic attack, this water that I can drink will like help calm me. So I was never ever seen without a water bottle because I needed it at all times. And again, you know, with all due respect to my parents, they at the time didn't know what was happening to me. So they thought that if they could, you know, remove the water bottle away from me, it would help me, but I was too dependent on it and it made it worse. And one specific incident that I recall vividly, I was 12 or 13 and we were going to Chuck E. Cheese. And I remember that everyone in the family got out of the car. My mom told me, leave your water bottle in the car. You don't need it. You don't need it. And so she took the water bottle, she put it in the car, and they locked the car, and my dad had the keys. And I went into a total frenzy. Like I like freaked out, total panic mode, started having, you know, the tightness of my throat, the tightness of my chest, and started feeling myself experiencing panic. And and this is like cringeworthy, but like this is, I have to say it, like what I ended up doing as again, like a compulsion, it had rained the day of or the day before. All I remember was that there was water on the car. And I remember vividly that because the water bottle was now in the car and I didn't have it with me and I felt like I needed it, I was literally taking my hand and wiping the water off the car and like putting it to my mouth because I felt like I needed it. So that was like, you know, very, very like clear signs of obsessive compulsive disorder from like the get-go. But again, like no one knew, I didn't know, you know, I just kind of had to do my best to accept, okay, the water bottle is in there, but there's water at Chuck E. Cheese, and like get myself, you know, there's so much mental strength that we needed to go through during our lives, you know, and I totally like need to take a moment to like honor our stories, honor you, honor your past you, honor me and honor my past me, that like we did the best that we could, especially when we were triggered. And like, that's tough, you know, and it's something that's like so beautiful to be able to now looking back, you know, take our experiences and share them with others to help them go through these things. Which again, perfect segue into like the following, you know, question is just, what helped you overcome your panic attacks? Were there certain people, songs, mantras, et cetera, that like kind of helped you to overcome?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of had a mantra that I tell myself that I know what this is. I know it's a panic attack and it can't hurt me. I think that was the major thing, knowing that it can't hurt me and it will pass. That was sort of what I would say again and again to myself. And I've heard people say it's not as easy as that, but I think a lot of it is thinking logically and sort of rationalizing the experience. And if you can really repeat it and say it with real conviction, and often I would say it out loud, just repeat it out loud. It's more powerful when you say something like that out loud to yourself and you really hear
Agreed.
It. Mm-hmm. It makes such a difference. And the other one I would do is distraction, to distract myself from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty major one. Like you say, with sort of crutches, is not having a crutch, because I think sometimes you end up associating a panic attack with that crutch, and it can almost bring one on.
Definitely.
Because it's that relation with that experience. So
mm-hmm. often I would try and find something that I really enjoyed, something that I love doing,
and go, I'm just going to completely focus on this. I mean, I love to sketch and draw.
Mm.
So that keeps your hand busy, and it forces me to focus. And it keeps your mind really busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I found really early on that heat really helped for me. So a bath or a shower. I'm a bit of a water baby anyway. I love having showers and baths and swimming and all that kind of thing. So I find being underwater or in a bath just really soothing. That's really helped me.
That's beautiful.
And I love bubbles.
No, who doesn't love bubbles, right?
Who doesn't love bubbles? Well, a good bubble bath.
That's
can't
awesome.
Beat that. It sounds a bit cliched, but for me,
not at all. I think that's so beautiful, and there's so much magic and power in what you just said, because when you can refocus the mind, shift the mindset, and focus on things that make you happy, that make you feel peaceful, that make you feel excited, you know, it is mm-hmm. giving the brain a break, and you're giving yourself that assurance, like, hey, body, I appreciate that, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, like, we were being chased by things and you needed to save me. Like, thank you for doing your job, but like, guess what? It's 2019. Our brains have evolved. Like, I don't need to run anymore. I'm okay. I'm safe. You know, I love what you shared too about, like, the panic attack can't hurt me. That's so beautiful and powerful, because there's so much truth in that. Like, the panic attack will not hurt you. You know, you are safe. You are okay. You don't need to go into the fight or flight response. And again, so much easier said than done, but it takes practice. I'm so happy that we're both able to be here sharing that we've overcome panic attacks, and that, you know, there is hope, and there is, you know, there are tools to work towards healing and recovery. And, you know, I think that this topic, out of all the topics that, you know, I've been tweeting about and blogging about, that I'm still in my recovery, you know, I feel very grateful that the work that I did was primarily on the panic attacks. And I think also just because of, like, how young I was when they started, that I needed to do something different, because I couldn't continue living with them. But, like, there is hope. And I just want to continue sharing this sense of hope, you know, to our listeners who, you know, again, could be sitting here thinking, like, okay, like, easier said than done. I've tried that. You know, I think another thing too is being patient and kind with yourself, and just trusting that it does take time, and that there is healing on the other side, and not to rush it, because these little practices, these little, you know, these mantras, these daily mindset shifts, you know, it might feel like you're not working towards healing. It might feel like you're not actively doing something, but you are. And every single second that you spend, literally second that you spend helping yourself realize, I'm safe, these are not going to hurt me, I'm going to focus on something that I love, your body will start to turn that thinking into its norm. Because right now it's trying to keep you in this comfortable state of anxiety. And it's such a, like, when I read that, you know, when I, as I've been, like, doing research on just, like, personal development and just like the way that the brain affiliates things and associates things. When I read that truth, I was like, there's no way that I'm going to believe that my brain actually thinks it's comfortable to be in a state of panic. But it's true.
Yeah.
When we think that, or when we go through things that make us feel a type of way, the brain recognizes that as something that is familiar. And when you sort of almost get out of that feeling, the brain tries to bring you back to a state of normal that it thinks normal is. So it takes double the effort to get yourself into a different mindset, which could sound daunting and impossible, but there's so much strength in that because the little things add up and it's possible.
Yeah,
and that's like definitely. So beautiful. Like my mantra was, again, similarly, like you are safe, you are safe. And the less power that I was giving my fear, doubt, uncertainty, you know, depression, anxiety, like the more that I was consciously removing the power that I was giving to those things in my life, the panic attacks were less and less and less and less. And now, you know, I haven't had a panic attack. I had like a mini episode like about a year ago, but the big, big, big panic attack, I haven't experienced one like that for at least like 2-3 years, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, that's great.
And that, thank you. That is like, if I would have known at, you know, 13 years old, like that I was going to, you know, be able to get to a point where I could minimize them and then ultimately like pretty much, you know, get rid of them, I would have never believed myself, even if I would have been the one going back in time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you summed it up really well.
Yeah.
I would say as well, family and friends are really important as well.
Yeah.
And them understanding what you're going through. Mm-hmm. And when they, if they can, or if they want to educate themselves, that's great. Because it's quite important, and I think really shows that you care about someone if you can support them through a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sort of share my mantra with sort of my mum or my partner, and at the time when I was really going through it, I'd ring them, because I used to live on my own, and I'd ring them up and say, I'm really struggling, I'm having a really difficult time, and they'd be able to share that mantra back with me. If I was in such a place where I thought, oh, I can't deal with this, I can't do it, they'd remind me of what I'd been telling myself. And say, you are strong, you can deal with this. And they would say, tell me my strengths and repeat back my strengths and say, you are strong and you're stronger because you deal with this and because you're working on it.
Definitely.
And that's a really powerful thing for someone to do if they want to support someone, I think.
Wow. I have chills. Oh my God. Like That is beautiful. Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm so happy to hear that. I'm so proud of you. That is like so, so beautiful. And I definitely want to extend that to our listeners, not to be afraid to talk about it, to be vulnerable is a very challenging thing, but it's one of the most rewarding things. And I can attest to that. I think that, you know, in every aspect of my life, you know, I'm doing the best that I can to be honest with my boyfriend about my mental health. You know, I've come clean to my parents about a lot of things that I experienced that they had no idea about. And it's been really helpful because they can help to keep you accountable to your own self. They can help to, you know, extend love and, you know, give you friendly reminders and help, you know, bring back those mantras. Like that is just, that's so beautiful. I'm really, really, I love hearing that. That's so important. Oh, amazing. And so as we are coming to a close of this episode, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners who are also struggling with panic attacks?
I would say you really do, like we already discussed, you do have to work on it. And it's not, there isn't a quick fix, unfortunately.
Right.
But if you work on it, and you realize what those triggers are, then you can overcome them. I definitely think you can. I mean, mm-hmm. I haven't had one for a serious one for about 3 years now.
That's so great.
I think once you get out of that mindset, like you said, it's almost like an addictive feeling to have panic attacks and mm-hmm. that anxiety. Once you get over that sort of hump, and you don't have them anymore, it just feels so fantastic. And you think, I can do this, and I don't have to live with this fear and have these experiences have that control over me. Mm-hmm. And knowing it doesn't have that control over you is so powerful and impactful for your life, and you can do so much more.
Definitely. And that word power, that's a great word. When you're able to give yourself that power back and looking at panic attack in the face as if it were this living, breathing human, you know, in front of you. It's like being able to look at it in the face and say, you don't have power over me. I have power over mm-hmm. you. And here's what I'm going to do about that. And you do.
Yes.
You do have the power. We all have the power in us. It's not always easy to access that power. And I think that a really high level of forgiveness needs to also be incorporated into the healing process, that, you know, forgive yourself for not having a quick fix. Forgive yourself.
Yeah.
You know, if you are doing the best that you can and you're reciting your mantras, you're, you know, talking to people, you're, you know, doing the things that are important for healing, and you're still experiencing the panic attack, not to get angry with yourself, not to get disappointed in yourself, not to feel shame or guilt. You know, it's okay. You are safe. You are, you know, you're okay. Like there is nothing wrong with you. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, and you're doing the best that you can. You are strong, you are powerful, and you will get there. So that's really just, again, something that I really want to share, you know, with everyone mm-hmm. is just this incredible, again, like piggybacking on what you just said, like giving yourself that power back. So that is beautiful. I celebrate that. Oh, amazing. Oh my gosh, Katie. Well, this was absolutely amazing. And to our listeners, you know, please know you are not alone. Katie and I are both available on blogs, on Twitter. You can find Katie at Katie Conabert and her website, stumblingmind.com. Please be sure to check that information out in the description of this episode. I will have everything listed there. Go over, say hi to her, show her your love and support. And again, we are here to answer any questions that you guys might have. But just know, again, you're not alone. We're here for you. And you are a strong, powerful warrior. So go forth. Have a kick-ass week. Thank you again, Katie. This was absolutely amazing. And I really, really loved this whole chat. Thank you.
Been great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next week for a new topic. To help spread the good vibes, please share this episode with friends and family, or if you share on social, be sure to tag me at Coach Lizzie.